KW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. No deal in the auto workers' strike against the Big Three, but the union says some major progress.
GM has now agreed in writing to place their electric battery manufacturing under our National Master Agreement. We've been told for months that this is impossible.
Auto Workers Union President Sean Fain says for now they won't expand the strike. Strike by 75,000 Kaiser Permanente employees ends early tomorrow. So far, no deal on pay or working conditions. Ukraine says it's in a dire situation, worried it could run out of weapons and ammunition before Congress decides whether to continue funding. The Army is also worried it might not have enough high-caliber artillery rounds, so it's placed an order for more than $1 billion worth. Former President Trump's civil fraud trial will continue next week. Today, an appellate judge rejected the former president's motion to delay the proceedings. This is ABC News. A manhunt in New England after the discovery of the body of a murdered woman near a Vermont college campus. That university has decided to remain closed for now. ABC's Stephanie Ramos.
The urgent search now underway for a suspect police say is armed and dangerous after a woman's body was discovered on a rail trail in Castleton, Vermont, yesterday afternoon. The Vermont State University campus, which is nearby, closed today. People remaining there urged to shelter in place.
It's a small town, so it's a bit alarming, and you never really expect it out here.
Police are not disclosing the cause of death, but say gunshots were reported in the area where the victim was found.
No arrests so far after more than 100 decaying bodies were found inside a funeral home near Colorado Springs. Fremont County Sheriff Alan Cooper today said they are working to identify the bodies.
Near the funeral home where the bodies were improperly stored was horrific.
Colorado Governor Jared Polis has issued a disaster declaration for the area. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
For the Talk of Green Bay News, I'm Pete Schwaba. Here's what you need to know. Students and staff at UW Oshkosh held a walkout to protest layoffs. The university is struggling to make up an $18 million debt. In August, university officials announced they would cut around 200 jobs to help close the gap. Protesters say they are worried about the quality of education due to the cuts, saying they want more state funding for their school and are petitioning for cuts to administrative salaries as opposed to faculty and student worker salaries. Complaints about rats are on the rise in Green Bay. At last night's city council meeting, the public was encouraged to keep reporting rat sightings so city officials can continue to manage the problem. Green Bay has received 129 rat complaints so far this year. The average number of complaints has been about 100 over the last few years. Most of the complaints have come from the city's west side near Lambeau Field. Pete Schwaba for the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW 97.9 News.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots.
Woot,
and now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Folks, I tell you this much, the Cripescast is just the butter on my cheese.
When it came time, like, oh, I'm going to pursue comedy. At the time, it was like, well, it was New York and Los Angeles. I'm like, I knew more people in New York. I knew you'd get funnier in New York and there's more stage time. I'm like, I'm going to LA. If my dreams are going to come crashing down, I'd rather have them come crashing down on the beach.
Cripescast every Saturday and Sunday at noon across Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
If I could be you,
and you could be me,
for just 1 hour.
If you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
The Todd Alba Show.
You can't impeach someone before they've committed an alleged crime. Even principled conservatives are going to look at that action and say, come on, what's going on?
The Todd Alba Show.
Dan Knotel, Republican of Germantown, said he was moving forward to uphold his quote-unquote constitutional duty, which is a joke.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
At greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the hashtag 50 years of harm. 50 years the American Legislative Exchange Council has been doing their dirty work. Most of those years behind closed doors, without anybody knowing what's going on, without we the people knowing just how bad they have been and the kind of insanity that's been going on. It was only about, I guess, maybe what, about 12, 13 years ago that we started finding out just how bad they were with this model legislation that they were pushing through, the buying of our legislators across the country, whining and dining and feeding them and, well, probably much more and much worse. And here to share some thoughts on 50 years of harm and maybe how we make sure that they don't have 51. I've asked our truth slayer, our Alec exposer, Lisa Graves. She's the executive director of True North Research, their corporate watchdog group. You can check out their work at truenorthresearch.org. Lisa, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, Rick, it's a joy to be on your show. I'm such a fan of your work and your audience, hardworking Americans who care about our Constitution and want to make the American dream real. So an honor to be on your show.
So 50 years of harm. And as I said a minute ago, you know, most of those 50 years in the back room, in the smoke-filled back room, doing their dirty dealings for corporate America at the expense of working people. How did they get exposed?
Well, a whistleblower came to me with all of the so-called model bills. And along with that model bill package, there was a piece of paper called ALEC 101. And it described how the private sector, meaning the corporations, and the public sector, meaning the legislators, got a, quote, equal voice and vote. And it turned out that, in fact, it was the case that ALEC was having these fancy meetings, as you pointed out, Rick, where lawmakers were schmoozed and boozed, wined and dined by these lobbyists. And then they were going behind closed doors without the press or public present and voting as equals on these bills to change our rights, limit our freedoms. And then those bills would get introduced in our state houses in Pennsylvania and across the country without any mention of the fact that they had already been pre-voted on by corporate lobbyists and special interest groups. And that some of these legislators were so willing to basically sell out their constituents that they were giving that special access to these ALEC funders. And so we launched ALEC Exposed in July of 2011 and helped push more than 100 corporations out of ALEC.
No, it's one of those things that I remember, you know, going, it's amazing how this was happening and nobody knew it was happening right under our noses and how many people were involved. It was like one of those open conspiracy things that finally when someone said, hey, this is going on, it was like, oh my gosh, now this makes sense of how well coordinated. Now we see it, and now they're open and on it. They're open about it. Their dirty work, which gives us a chance to fight back. But the kind of money and power that they wield, scary stuff.
Well, that's right. And, you know, I really want to do a hat tip to the National Education Association, one of the major teachers unions in the country, who back in the 1990s was trying to raise the alarm about what Alec was doing, targeting public schools, trying to privatize public schools. And then similarly, there was an effort by People for the American Way to do the same, to try to highlight what was happening with Alec. The trial lawyers tried to highlight it too. I think it was Defenders of Wildlife, you know, a couple of the green groups. But no press would cover it because they didn't have the bills. And so having that whistleblower, and I just want to say, Rick, that whistleblower was the result of the actual action of activists in this country who, for the first time in 2011, after some Daily Coast bloggers started writing about Alec, there was a small protest at an Alec meeting in Cincinnati, the first time in like nearly 40 years that it had ever been protested. And as a result of that protest, someone with a conscience within Alec came out with those bills and shared them, and they came to me. Wow. I ended up with those bills and published them. And so that was directly due to writers, bloggers, people, a handful of people who showed up to protest Alec, really unmasked them. And that made all the difference. And then, of course, what was happening at the time is that Alec was pushing measures to make it harder for Americans to vote. But they also had pushed a really controversial bill that became very controversial in 2012, the so-called Stand Your Ground Law, which was pushed by the National Rifle Association, voted on at a secret meeting at a fancy resort in Texas with Walmart as the co-chair, the largest seller of long guns, meaning rifles, the biggest peddler of retailer of bullets in the world, voted for that Stand Your Ground Law along with other corporations back in 2005. And then it became law through Alec, pushed in a lot of states across the country. So that really woke people up to the dangers of this secret operation of Alec, this pay-to-play group.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is you talk to the average citizen, and they think the game is rigged. They think their government's rigged against them, and you go, here it is. This is who's rigged the game. This is who's behind a lot of that sentiment. And as you said, it was just a couple of years ago that someone came and said, here's this model legislation that we now know about, unemployment being one of them as well, that they went and attacked all across the country. We don't know all of the damage they've done over the 40 years that no one exposed them. Or do we? Do we have an idea of all the damage they've done in the past?
Well, we have taken a deep look, and along with allies like Common Cause, People for the American Way, Greenpeace, labor unions, almost across the board have done a lot of investigating, and we discovered some really shocking things. So for example, we learned that Alec was partnering with a white supremacist to attack giving DC voting rights in the 1970s. Then we learned that Alec was at the forefront of the fight against the anti-apartheid divestment movement. It played a key role behind the scenes, trying to back corporations from having to get out of racially segregated, the racist, really corrupt system of South Africa and Pretoria. We then learned that Alec had played a crucial role for many years in pushing lies about climate change. At one point, even claiming that if climate change is happening, it's good for you, even though, it's having a devastating effect on our planet. We're seeing it now in really substantial ways. But the other thing that was shocking, Rick, was that Alec was opposing any raise to the minimum wage for years and trying to preempt cities from raising their own minimum wage. And so, you have a situation where everyone knows, all of your listeners know, it's more expensive to live in a city than the country. That's nothing wrong with the city or the country. It's just the reality of housing costs. And so why shouldn't cities be able to have a higher minimum wage than a place where housing costs a little less? I think the minimum wage should be raised across the board. Doesn't matter where you live. But at a minimum, a city ought to be able to say, hey, housing costs are high, we should be able to raise our wage. But no, Alec was opposing that from the beginning. Also tried to block paid sick leave in cities across the country through advancing the National Restaurant Association agenda. And just an array of things. One of the things that was so shocking was Alec was pushing bills to bar limits on interest rates because, you know, the consumers, ordinary people, just want to pay the highest possible interest rate. You know, that's not something people want. They don't want that at all. We should have relief from those really incredible usury, that incredible predation by these credit card companies and loan sharks. But who's one of the biggest funders of Alec? The big banks, the big credit card companies, and the loan sharks. Yeah.
The payday lenders, yeah. No, because they were part of that payday lending stuff, weren't they?
Yes. Yeah. Huge part of the payday lending, that like a longtime funder of theirs. And, you know, those people take advantage of working people who are just trying to make ends meet, you know, trying to deal with the cost of living. But Alec is on the side of corporations. They're on the side of the biggest, you know, biggest companies in the country against the interests of the American people. And, you know, you see these legislators basically sell out the people who they were elected to represent in order to go off to some resort and be treated like a king or queen by these lobbyists, you know, go to these cigar parties where they literally hand out cigars on silver platters. You know, it's shocking. And it, in some ways, it's shocking how cheaply some of these legislators in Pennsylvania and other places are willing to basically give up their votes and give you up in order to just get, like, you know, cheesecake on a stick and a cigar.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Lisa Graves. Lisa's the executive director of True North Research. They're a corporate watchdog group. You can check out their work at truenorthresearch.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Now, you were at the 50 Years of Harm Gala. I mean, the Alec Gala. Because I'm sure all the people who were at the big black tie event, they're proud of the work that they've done. They're proud of the destruction of unemployment and workers' comp and you know, attacks on workers' rights through the whole no rights at work agenda. I'm sure they're proud of that, but we working people, we're the ones suffering the consequences. So what did we see at the big black tie event?
Well, you know, you're right. They certainly have had success in reducing rights at work. I mean, that's been a major agenda of Alex, to attack the rights of workers, to attack teachers, and more. But you wouldn't know how proud they were by how they scurried into the building as this effort, this action was taking place outside the National Portrait Gallery, very posh, lovely building in D.C. As people, you know, were standing there with the signs and the bullhorn, you know, calling out Alec, these Alec legislators and lobbyists in their tuxedos and fancy sequin gowns were, for the most part, rushing into the building, not willing to defend the record of Alec, just trying to hide from the American people, which is their modus operandi. Even though Alec, you know, since we started putting those bills online 12 years ago, and since we used through the Center for Media Democracy, which I'm now the board president of, but which I previously led, and other efforts, we started putting those bills up. Alec started putting some of its bills up online too, to try to keep people from going to our website where we explained how bad these bills were, how bad these model policies were. What we know is that it's not just the people that we've seen, like some of these corporations that are longstanding Alec funders, like Big Tobacco. We know now that one of the biggest new funders of Alec is Leonard Leo, the guy that people may know from packing the Supreme Court and trying to get the court to be stacked with judges to overturn our rights. And that includes labor rights, you know, which they did a few years ago, as well as Dobbs, the abortion case, signaling that they might even go after contraception, Americans wanting access to contraception, and also attacking environmental rights. So Leonard Leo, through a couple of his operations, is now one of the biggest funders of Alec too. We didn't see him go into the portrait gallery. We saw a bunch of other people very fancy attire go in, but boy, did they mostly go in fast. They didn't want to hear from the American people.
Yeah. What's interesting to me is, you know, they're going into the portrait gallery. That can't be cheap.
No. Yeah, we're going to figure out. We're going to get a FOIA in and find out how much that cost. One of the things that was a bit shocking about that event was we could see who the gala sponsors were. The Center for Media Democracy, David Armiak, who's the chief investigator over there at CMD, posted that on Twitter. But what we saw was that, you know, it was a number of these Leo tide groups. Of course, Charles Koch's operations were there. Charles Koch, one of the biggest billionaires in the world, an oil baron who's made a ton of money on oil futures and things like that. But also the Humane Society was there. That was a shock to see the Humane Society sponsoring Alec. One of the first bills I read when that whistleblower gave me those bills was a bill to block Americans from being able to effectively sue pet food companies, big, huge pet food conglomerates, for damages if their pets were killed due to, you know, a poorly formulated, you know, puppy chow or something. You know, but there was Humane Society. So, you know, I'm hoping Humane Society is going to take a second look at why they're underwriting this voter suppression right-wing organization with the money that people are sending in to actually try to protect pets.
Wow. It just gets crazier and crazier.
Yeah. You know, sometimes what happens is one of these right-wing lobbyists will just sign up and no one's minding the store at the top of the corporation. That's actually why some of those corporations dropped out of ALEC, because they didn't even know they were part of ALEC. That their right-wing the right-wing lobbyists had basically paid the dues, $10,000, $15,000 to be part of ALEC. And as soon as they learned more about ALEC, a lot of those corporations dumped ALEC, and rightly so.
Well, let's hope a lot. Let's hope everyone dumps ALEC, because the 50 years of harm is far too much. Lisa, I appreciate you taking some time. Good on you for getting out there and having the voice heard. I hope folks will check out your website, truenorthresearch.org. You guys do incredible work. I hope you come back and keep us up to date on what's going on.
Will do, Rick. A joy to see you, and just a joy to be on your show. And hello and thank you to your amazing listeners. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Lisa Graves. She is the executive director there of True North Research. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So if you're wondering, you know, who's behind the Stand Your Ground laws, you know, the NRA and ALEC. And it's one of those things that, again, the right has built an incredibly powerful messaging machine with talk radio and cable news and all of the moneyed educators and all of the bloviators that they've got, but also they spend massive amounts of money on lobbying, on creating alternative realities through their state policy network, all these think tanks, Heritage Foundation, all the way on down. The moneyed interests understand return on investment better than anyone. They know if they can create their own reality and they can spin their own reality, they can cite their own reality. Facts be damned. You can just make stuff up as long as you can cite your own research. Go and do your own research. Sitting on the can with your mouth open watching a YouTube video made by one of your other underlings. They've got their own little cesspool of insanity. And they've been doing it for decades. Generally under the radar, like ALEC, 50 years. And for almost 40 of them, nobody knew they were around. They laid low. And what do we got now? We've got craziness going on. You know, the saturation of more guns. I mean, they're really the purveyor of more sales, because it's all about the sale. This is the problem with the country. Everything's about money. Everything's about the bottom line. Everything's about profit. Got to have more profit. The whole reason they keep pushing the, we've got to have the Second Amendment. Everyone's got to have, every home has to have an arsenal. Why? Because it means more money. It means more profit, more guns, more bullets, more disaster capitalism. So when an angry guy shows up to a governor's office with a handgun, which evidently happened this week, which isn't funny. I mean, but you know, this stuff happens more frequently now. Angry guy showed up with a loaded handgun to Governor Tony Evers' office at the state capitol in Wisconsin. It was arrested, taken away, made bail almost immediately. I don't know how you show up to a governor's office with a loaded gun, shirtless. He came back a couple hours later with a rifle instead, with an assault rifle. Really? Declared he wouldn't leave until he could talk to Evers about domestic abuse towards men. I don't know. I don't know. All I know is we're seeing more of this stuff. And the more heated rhetoric we're seeing, the more this stuff is going to continue. One of the things that's frightening to me is Trump is seeing himself being cornered. Because if you've noticed lately, his rhetoric has gotten a lot more angry, a lot more desperate. And look, there are the faithful out there. There are his flock who have been sold on this. It's hopeless. I talk to people every day who truly believe what Greg Gutfeld was talking about, that our schools are filled with, you know, cat litter boxes, that the teachers are indoctrinating our children, that they're forcing kids to transition. I mean, just craziness. That, you know, every city in the country is you know, on fire and there's crime. And you walk into a city, you get mugged. That's what they believe. That everything is horrible. Except, you know, here's fine. And this is the weird disconnect. Because I've had these conversations where people go, you know, everything's terrible. You know, everything's bad. Everything, the country's in peril. And you go, well, how are things for you right now? Well, I'm okay. Well, I thought everything was in peril. I thought everything was terrible. Well, out there. Out where? Show me what you mean. Oh, what you see on Fox News. Oh, you mean there's crime in cities. Yeah, there's crime in cities. There's always been crime in cities. In places where you have high poverty rates, where you have desperation, you're going to have crime. When I was a kid growing up in the 70s, I lived in a high poverty, high crime area. Saw lots of crime when I was a kid. Saw lots of man's inhumanity in man. I'm curious, you know, why that wasn't Joe Biden's fault back then. Oh, that's right. It's convenient now. If we solve poverty, if we solve some of those problems, maybe we solve the crime problem. Then there's the drug thing. We've always had drug problems. Why now? Oh, that's right. You got a Democrat in the White House. Immigration, same thing. Immigration is not Biden's fault. The fact that we have a Congress that can't come up with a solution, can't come with a path forward, is beyond me. Now, is it such a complicated situation that, given the fact that we've got so many crazy people in Congress right now because we're not right now? Could that be part of it? Could it be the solutions that we're given are impossible? Because what we're told, what I'm told by my red hat friends is there are only two solutions. What they want is slam the door, build fences, build walls, electrify, shoot people coming across the border. There's that. And then there's, well, what evidently they believe Democrats want, which is swing the doors open. And I've yet to find, it's not true. I did meet one person who said that we should swing the doors open. And they believed that the border should be like goods. We should be able to go back and forth. I don't believe in open borders. I think you do have to have sane immigration policies. I think you do have to have pathways. I think you do have to have the ability for people to come here who are refugees. But I also think we should be doing a whole lot more on helping people stay where they are and making their countries more livable. And I go back to 2010 when my Tea Party friends were all crazy about, we need to cut foreign aid. We need to slash and burn foreign aid. You know, the stuff that helped make places more tolerable. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1993. That was the day that President Bill Clinton signed into law reforms to the Hatch Act. The Hatch Act was passed in 1939. It limited the political activity of federal employees. The act was passed due to accusations of alleged political cronyism by Democrats on New Deal projects. Half a century later, Congress loosened the restrictions. In his speech before signing the reform, President Clinton explained the changes, saying, quote, "The Federal Employees Political Activities Act, which I am about to sign, will permit federal employees and postal workers on their own time to manage campaigns, raise funds, and hold positions within political parties. Still, there will be some reasonable restrictions. They wouldn't be able to run for partisan political office themselves, for example." President Clinton described the importance of the changes, saying, quote, "We've been supporting democracy throughout the world, but here in our own country, millions of our own citizens have been denied one of the most basic democratic rights, the right to participate in the political process." He ended his remarks by saying, quote, "I look forward to the infusion and federal and postal employee energy, expertise, and dedication into our political system that this bill makes possible. Today, under the regulations of the Act, most employees can assist in voter registration drives, attend fundraisers, contribute money, and distribute campaign literature. They can even run for office in nonpartisan elections. They cannot, however, use their jobs to influence elections or engage in political activity while on the clock. Today, there remains a balancing act between protecting the free speech of federal employees and keeping the government politically neutral." Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
In the mid-1800s, a new political party flared up in America, posing as an alternative to both the Democratic and Republican parties. Xenophobic and nativist, it was extremely secretive about its specific structure, motive, and agenda. Indeed, members were instructed to say, "I know nothing," when asked about details. Thus, it was quickly dubbed the Know Nothing Party. In 1856, it nominated Millard Fillmore as its presidential nominee, but he was reticent to talk about the party and even unwilling to proclaim that he was a member. He lost, and the Know Nothing soon withered. But now, here comes another alternative party with secretive motives and backers. Labeling themselves No Labels, this group ought to be named the Nothing Party, for it offers nothing of substance to voters. Its so-called common-sense agenda is fluffier than cotton candy, yet is trying to run a third-party candidate in next year's presidential race. Why? Follow the money. That's not easy to do, though, for this gaggle of conservative corporatists slyly incorporated as a nonprofit social welfare outfit, a deceit that lets it hide the names of its political funders from the public. The New Republic, however, got records revealing that No Labels is a fat cat front, with Texas billionaire Republican Harlan Crow leading the way. Who? Crow is the political patron who has secretly been lavishing luxury gifts and cash on Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, who in turn has embraced Crow's plutocratic positions in court cases. This is Jim Hightower saying that same plutocratic agenda appears to be fueling No Labels' third-party presidential push, for these rich politicos know that a milquetoast spoiler candidate would most likely draw independent moderates from Joe Biden, giving Crow and company another GOP corporate presidency. It's a cynical game, but that's how they play it.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, on Wednesday, October 11th, the Stop Trump Summit, America in Crisis, hosted by the New Republic. They're saying one of the most exciting events of the season. Going to examine, well, the disaster of the Trump first term, the state of his legal cases, his own strange psychology, and that of his MAGA followers, the messaging and polling of the 2024 campaign, and everything concerned Americans should want to know and must know before making their decision in 2024 and making sure that he doesn't take office again. The day-long summit will gather the New Republic's readers and enthusiastic New Yorkers in the area to, well, come together for a large-scale informal strategy session with some high-profile, high-focus folks. People like Michael Cohen, George Conway, Robert De Niro, Molly Jong-Fast. You have Tara McGowan going to be there, Al Sharpton, whole bunch of people. Randy Weingarten's going to be there, all kinds of folks. If you can't get to New York, TNR.com. That's where you go on Wednesday. You can stream the whole event for free. I highly, highly suggest it. Let's go to the phones. We got Howard on line one from Santa Fe. Howard, how are you today?
Hey, Rick, I'm doing great, man. I really am. We've had a lovely day here. Balloon Fiesta started, I think, and the town's flush with tourism.
Nice. Love Santa Fe. What's on your mind?
Alec. They had a couple of their get-togethers within a couple of miles of where I lived 10 years ago. I really wanted to sneak on the property and see what the heck it was, but I didn't. Anyway, the most despicable thing about Alec, they come in with the bills written, and then they auction them off. I mean, you get it? The legislatures don't have to do any work at all.
Yep.
Except fold the money up and put it in their wallet.
Now, that's the beauty of it. Alec does their homework for them. They get to just go and smoke cigars and drink whiskey and play Beauty Queen.
Yeah. It's reverse legislation, in my opinion. Legislation for sale.
Yeah. No, it's scary.
Well,
stuff.
That's it. Sorry to be so somber on that, but that's a real reality of that.
No, I appreciate it, Howard. No, it's an excellent point. Thank you. And to Howard's point, look, you know, I remember when the unemployment thing was going on. You know, my legislature, who is now my congressman, Scott Pardon Me Perry, he used, I believe, one of the Alec model legislations to move forward because, oddly enough, there was an identical piece of legislation put forth by another legislator, another Republican Alec member here in Pennsylvania to attack unemployment insurance, that the language was, well, you would get thrown out of school for plagiarism if you would have turned it in. And this is one of those things where Alec at the time was pushing this across the country. In fact, if I remember correctly, there was a legislator in Florida who didn't even bother to take Alec's name off of it. And put their own on. They just put it right in with Alec's name on it. What the heck? Be honest. And I gave them credit. At least they were honest that they weren't doing their work. They were just, you know, doing the bidding of someone who'd bought and paid for them. So yeah, there you go. But appreciate it, Howard. I wish you would have snuck onto the property and told me more. But I've known people who have gone to these events, and they're lavish events. You know, they wine and dine and schmooze and you know, line the pockets. It's literally, you know, you're buying our legislators. Now, that has tapped down since things have been exposed. But I got to tell you, I imagine, you know, go back into the 70s and the 80s and the 90s when nobody knew who they were. Even the early 2000s when nobody knew who they were. You know, you can see how this is a conduit to major payouts. You can see how this is a conduit to the next job after your legislator gig. And again, this is, you know, I have people say they're for term limits. The reason I'm against term limits is Michigan. When Michigan passed their no rights at work bill, if you remember when Michigan went for right to work, it happened like thieves in the middle of the night. You had a bunch of you know, Democrats and Republicans. You had a bunch of people who would have never voted for it had they stand for election, vote for it because they needed a job going out the door. And who do you think the conduit for that could have been? Oh, I don't know. Alec. You know, this is one of those things where, you know, you got friends. You got friends who can be helpful in times of need. Yeah, it's just amazing to me. I'm sure you all saw the story of Melania Trump has renegotiated her prenup. I didn't know you could renegotiate a prenup in the middle, but evidently this isn't the first time. Evidently she's done it a couple of times. But she wants to make sure that she's going to be left with plenty of money in the event that you know, all these legal things suck him dry. And, you know, good on her. I mean, she's smart. I mean, if you got to put up with being around him all day, yeah, okay. And I guess the leverage was they want her to be more involved in the campaign. They want her to be more visible because she's actually somewhat likable. I don't know about that, but you know, to the red hats, you know, she's the queen. So in that, she got the prenup, and this is one of those things where I'm going. The fact that her lawyers are saying, you know, we better lock some things in, is telling me she knows there's going to be nothing left. She knows that things are bad, things are desperate, and that he's probably not as rich as he says he is, which we've said all along, which is why, you know, again, I go back to the tax returns. I said, you know, look, you know, you have professionals who do those tax returns. They're generally not going to put themselves in peril, generally not. So there aren't going to be glaring crimes, I don't think. But they are going to say he's not as rich as he says he is, which is why he was, I believe he was hiding it. This is part of that as well, I think. Now, the reason that I think the prenup happened, or the renegotiation, is, well, there's going to be a whole lot of losing going on. Because today, the former top Trump Organization executive, Alan Weiselberg, evidently testified that, and you got to love this, he testified that he committed tax fraud because he was afraid he was going to get fired. Let that sink in for a minute. He has now openly said, look, yeah, I did it because, you know, I was afraid that he was going to fire me. You think about the tagline, the Trump tagline. And you've got Weiselberg, who's admitted now that, you know, under oath, he knew he was breaking the law and he did it anyway. He overestimated the value of all of the things, even though Trump's statement was, no, I can't possibly overvalue. Answer me this, because maybe I'm just fixated on this. Maybe this is just me. Maybe it's just my working class ethic, because I don't believe that you get something for nothing. I don't believe there's such a thing as a free lunch. I believe that most things are transactional. I believe that most things are quid pro quo. So if Trump truly, if this is actually accurate, and I believe it is, if he can go to the Saudis and go, look, I want $1 billion for this property. Or he can go to the Russians. He didn't bring up the Russians. But if you go down to Miami, if you go to Southern Florida, the Russians own most of Southern Florida. the Russian oligarchs bought up most of southern Florida with mob money. Understand what it is. And the reason that the whole Russia thing happened, and it wasn't a hoax, the Mueller report was very clear. There were numerous points of coordination, of cooperation. You can call it whatever you want. There were numerous points where they were working hand in hand. How about that? And it had everything to do with mob money, oligarch money, and property transaction. And what does Donald do? Property transactions. So would I be surprised if, you know, there are Russian things in there? No, of course not. And I said that during the Mueller stuff. And now that, you know, Trump has brought up Saudi Arabia, would we be surprised that there's stuff there? Because let me ask you, if you own a house that's, let's say, $100,000, and I offer you $500,000 for it, what's your first question to me going to be? Well, my first question to me would be, how fast can I move? You know, as long as I don't have to do anything for it. But my first question to you would be, what do I got to do for that? Because the house isn't worth $500,000. What do I have to do? And I think most rational people think the same way. What does Trump have to do to get his inflated price? You know, what's he on the hook for? Yeah, I got to tell you, it's angering to think that we have such a non-critical media structure that nobody, I've yet to read that anywhere. I've yet to read anyone asking that question, if that's really the defense. And maybe it's just me being suspicious. Maybe it's just me growing up as a poor kid in the projects who saw cons all the time, saw, you know, the street cons, you know, play out in front of me. But this guy has all the characteristics of a street con. We'll see where this takes us. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to wrap things up. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1996. 15,000 workers at the General Motors plant in Quebec walked off the job. Members of the Canadian Auto Workers Union were frustrated with their wages. They were also angry about layoffs and General Motors' move to outsource some of the auto production to non-unionized labor. One striker explained, GM doesn't want to have 30-year people anymore. They want temporary workers who they can pay lower wages. The Canadian auto workers had won an agreement with Chrysler that guaranteed the company would not sell off any Canadian parts plants. But GM refused to make a similar promise. During the strike, the union reported that General Motors' $39 billion profit last year was the largest single corporate profit ever recorded in Canadian history. The union argued that much of this profit came from underpaying Canadian workers. Canadians only accounted for 8% of the company's North American workforce, but they generated 42% of GM's total profit on the continent. Soon, GM workers at other Canadian plants joined the strike, which swelled to 26,000 workers. As the strike wore on, its impact was felt beyond the Canadian borders. Thousands of GM workers in the United States were temporarily laid off. The parts they built were not needed because of the strike in Canada. It is estimated that 90,000 cars were not produced because of the strike. Finally, after nearly 3 weeks, the union and the company reached an agreement. The workers won a 2% annual raise in addition to their cost of living increase, but they also agreed that GM could sell off two of its plants and allow GM the right to do more outsourcing of parts from outside suppliers. And for that, the workers at those plants were guaranteed their wage level for 3 years. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
RickSmithShow.com. Remember, TNR.com, the New Republic. They've got their Stop Trump Summit on Wednesday, October the 11th. Mark your calendar. You're not going to want to miss it. I highly suggest taking a look at it. And if you're not in the New York area and you can attend, you know, it's online. It's free. And I highly, highly suggest paying attention to that because we need to organize. So today, interesting, I woke up to Kevin McCarthy is out. He's resigning. You're not going to have Kevin McCarthy, you know, to kick around anymore, you know, because that's it. He's considering, you know, resigning from the House at the end of his term. That's it. Done. And then, well, he said maybe he's not going to resign. He's going to serve to the end of next year, and you know he's going to run for re-election. And then he said, well, I never considered resigning. And I go, wait a second, how did we go full circle here? Oh, that's right. This is the news trap. Just like, and I love this one too. There's going to be a speaker's debate, as if reality Congress hasn't gotten crazy enough already. We're going to have a speaker debate. We're going to have 20 people on the stage debating to be speaker, of which nobody has the ability to vote other than the people in Congress. But we're going to put it on Fox News, and Bret Baier was going to be the host. It was going to be a closed debate and discussion, and it was going to be Monday night. We knew it was going to be Monday night. And then it was like, well, maybe not, and then it's off. And then I was waiting for them to say, no, we were never really, really considering it. And they're going, what? Again, you need to create buzz in news. And again, I'm waiting for them to blame someone. You know, there was a televised debate and so-and-so ruined it. And look, I don't know who the Republicans are going to make their speaker. I don't. I don't know if they can come to an agreement on who the speaker is going to be. I know Steve Scalise has blood cancer. His doctor gave him the A-OK because evidently the cancer treatment's going good, and good for him. I hope he does well. But he said today he's not looking to punish anyone, which he's trying to get the 8 people not to oust him if he does get it. If he does get it, he says we don't have the luxury of a big majority. No, you don't. And in you know, several months, you're not going to have the majority at all. Now, what I find hysterical is I could have told you that Donald Trump was going to back Jim Jordan, because Jim Jordan is the craziest of the candidates. So, of course, you would pick Butthead. Is it Beavis or Butthead? One of them. Of course you would choose him. What I found hysterical is before Trump had an opportunity to present his endorsement, to do the whole build up, to do the whole, you know, the whole, you know, spiel, a guy I have never heard of, Representative Troy Neals from Texas, evidently announced it beforehand. Kind of preempted the announcement, which I think is hysterical. Trump's people were not happy. In fact, one of his aides said, Neals just totally effed this up. Very unhappy. Very unhappy. But the show will continue. I'm optimistic that they will not come to a speaker anytime in the very near future. I look at someone like Gates, who they're eventually going to go after, and Cawthorn, they're going to get him out, which is a good thing. The more of those people we can get rid of, the better. But here's the thing. If you get rid of Gates, you might get someone worse. Now, that's always the risk. Generally, the devil you know is, you know, the one you try and stick with. But he's out on the fringe. What I found interesting is on an online fundraiser, Gates went after the impeachment effort, said it's unserious. Now, again, this is one of these guys. He's on the Kook Caucus. He should be all on board in the impeachment. So when someone like Gates is saying it's an unserious impeachment, you kind of gotta wonder, what are the Republicans doing? I know what they're doing. They're dumping in the bed. And what is it about Republicans and feces? I mean, you go back to January 6th. You go back to January 6th. And, I got to tell you, I've been to protests. I've been to rallies. You know, I've been to things. It never crossed my mind that, hey, I occupied, the Wisconsin Capitol. I've occupied the Pennsylvania Capitol. I've done these things myself. Never. Never once did I ever think it was a good idea to go, this would be a good place to drop trow and leave a present. I never thought that. I never thought that was a good idea. I never thought of leaving it on the floor, smearing it on the walls. Never once. It never crossed my mind. And I think any decent person, any rational, sane, decent human being, that doesn't cross their mind. There's a place for that. They actually have a room for it. Has a special seat for it. If you're out in the woods, there's a tree that you can hide behind. Do that. There's all that stuff. But never in a building that other people occupy. So I don't know what it is about Republicans and feces. I'm not quite sure, but a Republican candidate for state assembly in New Jersey, evidently, according to the New Jersey Globe, pled guilty to smearing fecal matter on the doors of a children's daycare center. Yep. Joseph Vizzo. Joseph says it was done before anyone got hurt. I don't know what that means. He said, I'm not going to defend it. It was wrong. I was a young man. It was a horrible time. And I made a mistake. Obama came into office the year before. Huh. That's an interesting defense. It's an interesting defense. So, can someone break that down? How young were you? Was he one of the children in the daycare center? Because that I would understand. Because sometimes children in daycare centers do that. Why would you do that in a daycare center? Because he was an adult at the time, clearly. Why would you do? Oh, he's having a dispute with a neighbor who owned the daycare center. That's why you're going to subject other people's children to your... Yeah. Doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? But then again, look, these are folks who don't make an awful lot of sense. And this guy wants to run for office. You remember the good old days when something like this would permanently bar you from even considering running for office? Maybe we should consider returning to those days. Maybe we should consider, returning to a day where, I don't know, if you're smearing fecal matter on a daycare center door because you're mad at your neighbor, maybe you shouldn't be around other people, let alone leading other people and making policy that other people would have to abide by. Maybe just kind of a thought. I'm just spitballing here. And this is my problem again with the Republican Party as a whole. These aren't serious legislators. These are people who won popularity contests. These are people who are, hey, look at me. I want to get my next gig on Fox News. I want to get, they see this as a stepping stone to some bit of fame and prosperity instead of going and doing the work of the American people. Because look, what have they done? What have they gotten done? And I point to Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats when they had control the last time around with a slimmer margin. And you know what? They got stuff done. They functioned. So this idea that they're going to throw out at us that government's broken. We need a civil war. Elections don't work. Government's broken. We need a dictator. No. Republicans are broken. Maybe we need to get rid of them. Government works just fine when people who believe in it, when people who understand how it works, when people who want it to work are the ones.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media
Baby
app.
Baby